This Fronteras podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Undocumented students living in Texas have a right to an education. And once they have college in their sights, they may encounter uncertainty over whether or not they're allowed to enroll. According to Texas law, undocumented students who have been living in the state for at least 3 years prior to receiving their high school diploma or GED are eligible for in-state tuition. But it's not a policy that's well known to these students or their parents. Many think they'd qualify only as international students, which means higher tuition. A year ago, the University of Texas at San Antonio established a Dreamers Resource Center to assist undocumented students with their academic needs and to serve as a campus and community advocate. We spoke to Courtney Balderas Jacob on Fronteras last year when she was serving as the fledgling center's interim program manager. She joins us again today, now as the assistant director of the Dreamers Center. Also joining us today are Enrique Alemán, professor and chair at UTSA's Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies. And we're also talking to UTSA alumni and dreamer Andrea Ramos Fernandez. When Fernandez was just getting into college, finding assistance as an undocumented student was a scary and intimidating venture.
So before I attended UTSA, I attended Texas State in San Marcos. Immediately when I enrolled in Texas State, I was told, you're an international student. And immediately the fees were like piling up. Tuition was double the cost. And I remember just being like eternally stressed for like 3 weeks. And so I saw someone on campus and I asked something. And eventually it led for me going to a back building somewhere on campus. And they helped me fill out the application to say that I am an in-state tuition student, that I had the opportunity to receive some aid. And that first year, everything, all the fees were waived at Texas State just because of that. The problem came the year after that because I didn't know who to go to again. And the people that were in that building, in that back building, they were no longer there. So I ended up piling over $13,000 in debt. And I just wasn't happy. Things on campus just weren't good either. It was right before President Trump became elected. It was that year leading up to the election, so everywhere on campus, there was a lot of racism. The first year that I was on Texas State campus, there were posters plastered around campus with the phone number to ICE, calling for undocumented students to be deported. And everything just kind of led up for me to transfer to UTSA. And when I transferred to UTSA, it was like the same thing. You're labeled once again an international student. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have to do this, but I had to do this alone. During my second semester, once Trump got elected, I had a breakdown and I told one of my professors that eventually that professor connected me to another professor, that connected me to another professor, that connected me to another professor. And that was basically how I found Immigrant Youth Leadership, which was IYL. And that's how I met Dr. Alemán. That's how I met other professors at UTSA that were very helpful. But it was the fact that I had to go to every single person and tell them I'm undocumented. And me having to expose myself in that way, that led for me to find aid. Sometimes I think about the fact that I could have told that to a person that wasn't going to be helpful, that actually could have done something to hurt me. And it took a lot of out of me, and I know that it took a lot of other students to have to ask for help when you never know, especially during this time of uncertainty during President Trump era of anti-immigration policy.
Well, Enrique Alemán, you, as Andrea has mentioned, you had assisted her in trying to find her some help and what she needs to do in order to attend UTSA. And I understand that you've had experience working with Dreamers in Utah, where you were employed previously to coming to San Antonio.
Right, Norma, yeah, for 11 years I worked at the University of Utah as a faculty member and worked with student leaders that were undocumented, that were dreamers, and oftentimes saw the challenges that they faced, not only at the institution, but in the communities that they lived. And it made us think that faculty and staff who are concerned about these issues are already working on ways to create spaces on campus so that students do well. And UTSA, like other institutions, struggles with Latino students in general. It's one thing to get them onto campus. It's another thing to provide the support for them to graduate. We feel like faculty push institutions to create support systems so that students like Andrea or alumni like Andrea can come and study like they want. What's troubling at this time, as she mentioned, with the Trump administration is students who are wanting to be educated. They want nothing more than to be provided an opportunity to be active, to be engaged with their own educational empowerment, to give back to their communities. And unfortunately, institutions oftentimes put up additional barriers for that to happen. And so spaces like the Dream Center are meant to be places where students can feel welcome, where they can be given support services, where students can be connected to the academic programs that will allow them to achieve their goals. These students have been here since they were little. They have put into the system, and so they should be given access like every other student that wants to come to an institution. As a faculty member, that's one of my roles, and staff people like Courtney are providing the support to students that they deserve.
So, Courtney, have you seen a number of dreamers come forth to seek your assistance? Because, as Andrea was saying, it's a little intimidating to be exposing yourself as undocumented to so many people. But now that you're kind of considered a safe place to go, have you seen a number of students come out as undocumented?
Yes, I have had dreamers come by all throughout this last year coming in to see me, but that being said, even though we are a safe space, they do come in still very stressed out, still a lot of fear. And because when they started coming in the fall, there was just a lot more fear after the family separation. And for current dreamers that we had, just that level of uncertainty and despair is a little bit higher. That being said, it's really nice when they come in and they say, you know, we heard about your center, or I saw you at one of the community college campuses and we met, so now I feel comfortable coming in to see you. My mom called, you talked with her, thank you for being helpful, this is why I'm here. So that's been an amazing thing to see over the last year.
Undocumented students receive in-state tuition. That's actually written into Texas law. But has the University of Texas at San Antonio, or maybe other universities that might have similar centers, do they feel that there might be any repercussions under this current administration? A lot of anti-immigrant sentiment. Courtney or Enrique, if you want to weigh in on this, do you think that the university might be under some pressure that, you know, the state funding that goes to these state institutions might dry up as some sort of a punishment for allowing dreamers to access certain resources?
Sure. I mean, I think that's always one of the arguments that institutions make, that as a public institution, we're worried about what the state legislature is going to do every 2 years. And so we're fearful of being seen as too political. And there's always risk in any kind of leadership role. You know, there's always risk with trying to make sure you're meeting the needs of your community, but also having to make the argument in Austin every 2 years. I think the question that we need to continue to ask is if we're for education for everybody. Leaders need to reframe this idea and humanize the issue, because we're talking about people who are our neighbors, who on a daily basis contribute to the betterment of our communities. And if somebody in Austin wants to argue about providing educational opportunity for citizens, these people are citizens, then that's something leaders need to do. They need to stand up for that and humanize the issue in a way that oftentimes with the political rhetoric that we see coming out of Washington tries to dehumanize people who are our neighbors and are doing things that we would ask of anybody.
DACA was huge in the political conversation about a year ago when President Trump was threatening to eliminate DACA, but courts have stepped in mm-hmm. and continued the reapplication process. But DACA and dreamers always seem to be held at the end of the carrot at the end of the stick. And Andrea, how do you feel about just sort of being a political ploy when it comes to, you know, border funding. Recently, just not too long ago, during the most recent government shutdown, one of the elements in the conversation was extending citizenship or eventual citizenship to Dreamers. And that was quickly shot down. But again, you're being used sort of as this political tool so that a certain side can get what it wants. Does that feel dehumanizing to you?
I think, yes, it does feel dehumanizing. The experiences that I've gotten from being undocumented is that I've had to learn to basically prove to be worthy in all aspects. It's not just, oh, I'm a human being. No, I have to be an exceptional human being to be able to be validated for one thing or another. And in the end, yes, I've seen over the last 2 years how Dreamers like myself or undocumented people have been used as the carrot stick. And we are political deals. We are a border wall. We are all these things that we are meant to be traded for. And in my life, I've learned to deal with that in my own personal ways. But at the same time, from having been able to speak to leaders in politics, from having been able to go to Washington, D.C. and advocate for immigration reform many times, seeing the people in front of me say, well, you know, we like you and we think you're going to be good, but we can't just advocate for your whole entire community. You're going to have to choose. So it's not only I'm going to have to choose between my parents and I, but I'm going to have to choose between 11 million or 3.02 million undocumented youth or 800,000, the number that DACA has been thrown around. At this point, it's been more of, well, you're going to have to deal with it and you're going to have to work hard and you're going to have to work even harder to change things. And that's why I do what I do, because I am kind of done of being told you're an alien that is not wanted here unless you're doing something extraordinary. And I am a strong advocate of people, just people that are able to do things, whether they're extraordinary things or not. So if anything, out of all this entire horrible things that happened with the administration, I'm still sort of thankful because I am given the privilege to use my voice even louder because of it.
That's Andrea Ramos Fernandez, a Dreamer and UTSA alum, who's currently working as a legislative aide at the Texas Capitol. We also heard from Courtney Balderas-Jacob, assistant director of the UTSA Dreamers Resource Center. And we spoke with Enrique Alemán, professor and chair at the University of Texas at San Antonio's Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies. To hear more of our conversation, visit tpr.org. The UTSA Dreamers Resource Center just marked its first year of operation, and in the past year, it's hosted renewal clinics for students with deferred action for childhood arrival status and is serving as a model for the development of similar centers at other universities across the U.S. Coming up, the battle at the Alamo cemented San Antonio in Texas history. The bodies of its heroes were burnt atop a funeral pyre. They're not buried on the famed grounds, but over 1,000 souls are.
If they thought that Davy Crockett was buried there, they would have put a fence around it a long time ago. But because it's nothing but dead Indians and Mexicans, what else can I say?
Next on Fronteras, Native Americans in San Antonio are working on rewriting their narrative. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. On March 5th, 1731, Spanish friars essentially handed the keys to San Antonio's missions to the Native American families who lived there. Just 4 days later, 56 residents from the Spanish archipelago of the Canary Islands landed in San Antonio, sent by Spain's King Felipe V to establish the first official government in the province of Texas. And with that, thousands of years of Native American history in San Antonio began to disappear. It was called the Acto de Posesión, the act of possession. It was a key moment in San Antonio's history. Three of San Antonio's missions, Espada, Concepcion, and San Juan Capistrano, would be owned by the Native American populations who lived, loved, worked, and died on the land. It's a piece of history American Indians in San Antonio are trying to recover. Though the city celebrated its tricentennial in 2018, thousands of years of history existed before Spanish soldiers and friars stepped foot in Yanaguana, the land of spirit waters, as San Antonio was known to the natives. On a warm, sunny Saturday, the Mission San Juan commemorated the Acto de Posesión with a Founders Day celebration featuring cultural entertainment, traditional foods, and native vendors. But the event was more than just a commemoration. It was an effort to rewrite a narrative. Carla Aguilar is development coordinator with American Indians in Texas at the Spanish Colonial Missions, AIT, which hosted the event.
We have to explain to folks that we've been here for 10,000 years, and San Antonio grew around these Indian pueblos, which were the missions, and these Indian pueblos were comprised of nomadic tribes that had been in the region for 10,000 years. You're not just a Mexican from San Antonio and your family's been here for 10 generations. Your roots go so much deeper than that.
Aguilar, who's also a member of the Auteca Paguame tribe of the Tap-Pilam Coahuiltecan Nation, says generations of San Antonians have been shamed out of their heritage.
To this day, people would rather identify, you know, their ancestral lineage as Canary Islander rather than Native American because there's this underlying prejudice against being Indian or La Indiada. Who's educated us about who we are? Who's talked to us about the Alamo? Who's talked to us about the Misiones? Everything's been taught to us from a settler's perspective.
This river here is full of me and mine. This river here is full of you and yours, right here.
State Poet Laureate Dr. Carmen Tafoya embraces her mixed background, the mestizaje, which goes back centuries in San Antonio.
The intermingling of the races was very present in my family's narrative of who we were and why we had the high Indian cheekbones and why our families were, as my grandmother used to say it, como los frijoles pintos, algunos güeros, algunos morenos, algunos con pecas, being like a bunch of pinto beans. Some of us were light, some of us were dark, and some of us had freckles.
Tafoya says the Eurocentrism present in much of Texas and San Antonio history must be shaken off in view of a larger picture.
This is a place seeped in history where there are bodies in this ground that were buried 1,000 years ago, and there are structures in this ground that are millennia old.
Those bodies in the ground, at the Mission San Juan, there have been two reburials of human remains, which were unearthed during a 1967 utilities dig. Ramon Juan Vasquez is AIT's executive director. AIT was founded to get back those Native American remains, which had been scattered in laboratories across the U.S. It took over 30 years to get most of the remains back home.
We thought it was over in 1999, but last year I had to travel to UC Davis, pick up 26 human remains, bring them home, reunite them with the remains that are at Center for Archaeological Research. The Texas Archaeological Research Laboratory in Austin has 11 human remains that were taken from Mission San Juan in the 1930s. SMU sent three that they had in their closets.
The reburials at Mission San Juan are just part of the battle to rewrite a narrative. Vasquez says a larger cemetery exists where over 2 million tourists tread each year, on the grounds of the cradle of Texas liberty, the Alamo. 1,377 people are buried there. Their identities are recorded in the Alamo Book of Burials, which covered the years 1703 to 1885.
Why wouldn't we have a concentrated effort to protect that asset, that cultural asset that we have here in San Antonio? And I can only come up to the reason is, and as ugly as it sounds, that because it's nothing but dead Mexicans and Indians buried there. And if it was a Catholic cemetery of Irish and German Catholics, they would have protected that cemetery a long time ago. If they thought that Davy Crockett was buried there, they would have put a fence around it a long time ago. But because it's nothing but dead Indians and Mexicans, what else can I say? I mean, prove me wrong.
The San Antonio Missions Cemetery Association and the Tapilam Coahuiltecan Nation are asking the Texas Historical Commission to designate that portion of the Alamo as a historic Texas cemetery. It's not a designation. The Alamo Trust, a nonprofit that manages the day-to-day operations at the Alamo, wants to recognize. In a letter to the Texas Historical Commission dated January 18th of this year, the organization's CEO, Doug McDonald, wrote that in the group's opinion, quote, a historic cemetery, as defined by Texas law, does not exist on Alamo property, end quote. Ultimately, Vasquez wants the story of San Antonio to expand beyond that of Spanish soldiers and friars and Canary Islanders.
It's beautiful. The Canary Islander story is great. But I still believe that our story as the Coahuiltecan people is the greatest American story when it comes to perseverance. We're still here.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz, and our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Wako to chen, wako to chen.